Hey everybody, what's going on? This is Hunting Out Loud, your host Rob Michon. And today we're talking with Tyler of Get Outdoors in the Bluegrass. What's going on, Tyler?
Not a whole lot. Hopefully technology won't keep failing us and we'll be able to move forward.
We've been going at it for 20 minutes. Of course, my listeners, they're used to this. They know. I'm kind of like the Cy Robertson of the outdoors in a way.
There you go.
Just not as popular. So, anyways, let's go. Those five questions I had to ask you earlier, and they was tough ones, and you passed, but the listeners, let's let them in on it. So, question number one, hunting or fishing?
You know, that's the second time I've heard that question. It's still hard because now I'm thinking about it. But I'm gonna go fishing because I'm a warm weather guy, and at least that's during warm weather for the most part.
Yeah, fair enough. That's good. So then, archery or gun when it comes to hunting?
Yes, I like them both, but, you know, I also like the challenge, so I'm going to have to pick archery.
Yeah. You know, so a lot of people are just hardcore archery. I kill a lot of my deer with my bow, but if it comes gun season and I'm not tagged out, I mean, I'm taking my gun. It doesn't bother me. But I would go archery, too, if I had to choose one myself.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, we try to be as versatile or diverse as possible. I mean, you know, standard compound bow, crossbow, muzzle loading, and modern rifle, we do it all.
Well, you mentioned crossbow. Now, they've changed the laws here in Kentucky when it comes to crossbow season. I really haven't looked a whole lot into it. I just seen it kind of come across one of the social media sites. Do you know much about what's going on with that? I mean, the season?
Yeah, I do, actually. It pretty much lines up exactly with normal archery season, except it starts, I think, maybe 2 to 3 weeks later than normal archery season. It still starts in September, but I think it's like September 21st rather than, you know, archery starts at the very beginning of September. So, yeah, I know that a lot of people have been pushing for that. I mean, my dad's in his 80s. That's all he can use is a crossbow.
Yeah.
And, you know, actually, starting last year, I did some home repairs a couple of years ago. I was working for a company here in town and doing some side work, and I ended up pretty much having to side a whole house by myself with a hammer. And in combination of growing up playing baseball and pitching, I've blown my arm out. And I actually had to get one of the doctor's exemptions last year to use a crossbow. Now, even though I have an exemption, if my arm's not bothering me, I'll use the bow.
Right.
But I can't, even when you pull a bow back and, you know, you've got that release on there and it, you know, the poundage isn't as tight, it still takes some for me to hold it back. So I'm kind of excited about it. I mean, I think it's going to get a lot more youth in the woods and a lot more harvest for the youth than getting them hooked, in my opinion.
You know, and I feel the same way. I know some people's going to have heartburn with it, you know. I'm sure you see it all the time, people kind of bashing crossbows. I don't understand that, for one. And, you know, my argument is, I hunt Ohio a lot. Ohio is, crossbow comes in day one, and it ends with archery season. You know what I mean? Crossbow is in the full deer season over there, other than their gun season, of course. Well, I guess it's gun season, too, actually. I can use them then.
Yeah.
But the thing is, you know, there's huge bucks in Ohio. It's not hurting the population. It's not doing anything. And like you said, if it'll get more people outdoors, we should all be all for it because hunting comes first, you know.
I mean, in Kentucky, we had record-setting harvest last year.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, especially on opening weekend. And, I mean, there's still plenty of deer and there's still plenty of trophy bucks. And, you know, it's just it's just the social media politics of it, I guess you could say. But, you know, my youngest, you know, he's 11 years old, and, I mean, he shoots the bow, and he does really well. But, I mean, is he really ready to go out there and stick a deer and confident in the shot? I mean, everybody originally, I mean, we all know putting the sights on a deer with the bow is a lot different than putting the sights on a target when buck fever sets in and the shakes and all your adrenaline starts rushing. So there's got to be a first time for everybody. But, I mean, he's going to get a whole lot more youth out in the woods to get them hooked and get them interested. And that's just, I'm all for it.
I'm all for it, too. And you're talking about your son. You're 11 years old. In my day, you know, I'm in my 40s. But when I played basketball and baseball and football, you know, we might have had 15, 16 baseball games. Now these kids might play 40 or 50 baseball games at 11 years old. I know my son did.
I mean, all the sports, whether it's you know, the softball, girls softball, little league baseball, middle school baseball, the new archeries, that, you know, a lot of schools are doing archeries, and you got S3DA and all that, and it's just amazing the amount of time that parents have to invest in traveling and all these games and everything.
And where I'm going with this is the kids don't really have the time to shoot a compound. So having that crossbow where you can get them out, and they need to practice it as well, but not to the extent of shooting a compound. So you can still get them out there. They can be successful. I don't think people look at things like that a lot of times. They just speak before they think, you know.
I agree 100% because there's a lot more to practice in hunting than just target practice.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. So, all righty. Well, we'll go on to I like this answer. I already know this answer, people. It's a good one for some of y'all. Kentucky or Louisville college basketball?
No-brainer. Kentucky. Blue.
Man, I thought we had it last year or this past year. Daggone. I thought we was going to Final Four for sure. Did you?
I did. I mean, I think every Kentucky fan always thinks that we're going to the Final Four.
Yeah.
I had the luxury years ago, right before the John Wall and all that, maybe it's after. It's been a while, but we actually got to go down to the Final Four when it was in Houston, and of course we got knocked out first round. But it was still amazing. But you always think we're going to make it.
Oh yeah,
we're Kentucky fans.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, now knowing that you're a Kentucky fan, Coach Cal, I know he gets a bad rap. If you're not a Kentucky fan, it seems like people hate him. My kids went to Coach Cal camp. I'm sure you know about Coach Cal camp.
Sure.
And that guy, you know, us parents, my wife, we was all in there, and all the parents were in there watching the kids play. But Coach Cal comes in there, and I'm telling you, he goes out of his way to talk to everyone. Well, I kind of sit off to the side, you know. Scottie Pippen's in there, everybody's in there, and I just don't want to bother, you know, Coach Cal, because everybody's running up to him, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
So he's talking just like you would see him on TV, and he talks to everyone, and there's a lot of people in those gyms. You know, there's like three courts where we was. I can't remember which spot we was there. But so three games going. And he looks around, and I'm watching my son. He sees me sitting over, and it was almost like, hey, I haven't talked to this guy. And here he comes. I mean, just like just puts his arm around me. Which one's yours? Well, the one in the blue shoes. Oh, yeah, yeah, he's doing great. And just blah, 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 like we're friends or something. You know, he is the greatest. He's the best. I mean, he's the only guy that can handle Kentucky, in my opinion. Maybe Bruce Pearl, I don't know, but, you know, it takes someone like that to handle Big Blue Nation for sure.
Yes, it does. You gotta be resilient, humble, and have tough skin.
Yeah, I love that guy. So, all right, well, let's move on. Bo Jackson or Herschel Walker?
I go with Bo Jackson, man.
Can't go wrong.
Back to the Tecmo Bowl video games and everything else and all the commercials, Bo knows football. Yeah, I'm going Bo Jackson.
I'm telling you. Everybody wanted the Raiders back in on that game for sure.
That's right.
You young guys don't know what we went through.
No, there was no juking and spinning back in the day.
No, it was just a straight line, and you couldn't stop him. All right, last question. Hank Jr. or Florida Georgia Line?
No-brainer. Hank Jr.
Man, flying collars. That's great. That's great. Well, I'd eat up 10 minutes real quick. So let's see here. Well, I know you all have a lot going on there. We talked there briefly before we started fighting with that app. You know, you have a hunting show. You have a guide service going on, and you're starting some minerals and some feed. But let's start off with your hunting show, how that come about. You talked to me a little bit about that before we started this here. So if you want to go on with that.
Yeah, our TV show is, we call it Outdoors in the Bluegrass, and it's really family oriented. But like I said, you know, I had done some initial video and filming production when I first started in. Everybody does stuff on YouTube eventually, but I got to do some stuff for the Hunt Channel for a fishing TV series called Gone Fishing Pro. And my brother, Scott, one of my three older brothers, was really involved in it. And at the time, he had been diagnosed with stage 4 esophageal cancer. And so, you know, I wanted to make sure that while I was filming for that, they pretty much gave me free reins. I went out down to Tennessee. At the time, our group was called Real Fishing in Kentucky. And we went down to Tennessee and we fished Coral Hole Lake and did some filming together. And unfortunately, that ended up being our last fishing trip together. But fortunately, I've got it on film and footage for forever. So when he passed with esophageal cancer, I'm the youngest of five. I got three older brothers, one older sister. My parents, you know, my dad's just turned 80, and my mom's just 4 years behind him. I know you're not supposed to tell a woman's age, but I'm sorry, Mom. And it was just, we've just been a very close-knit family over the years, very outdoor-oriented, with hunting and fishing and camping and everything else that you could possibly think of. And before he passed, you know, in his last days, he goes, "I just want to make sure that you all, you're not sad. You don't cry for me. I don't want a funeral. I want a celebration of life. I want you all to live life to the fullest and stick together as a family and spread the awareness of esophageal cancer." And it was important to him to want to spread the awareness of esophageal cancer because, before he even had symptoms that made him feel like he needed to go to the doctor, he was already stage 4.
Oh.
And stage 4 esophageal cancer has a 5% success rate of surviving. And it's a very sneaky cancer, and 95% of who it affects is males over the age of 30. And the reason why the survival rate is so terrible is because the symptoms, the initial ongoing symptoms, are heartburn. Well, our entire family has heartburn. We got Rolaids in our truck. We got Rolaids in our medicine cabinet.
Right.
And, being the tough man that he was, he toughed it out. And, he did some contract work, actually, for our military. He spent 3 years over in Afghanistan doing private contracting work. He was a mechanic, fixing tanks and all kinds of stuff. And it's when he, a few short years after he got back that he got diagnosed. And, when we did a celebration of life and my sister-in-law, his wife, and his two sons and his daughter, my niece and nephews, they repeated his three last wishes on the ride home. I'll never forget it because we were down in Tennessee. We came back. We passed near Barron River Lake where we always went camping together. And I just had this, I saw how sad my parents were. We were all just sad. And I'm like, we're already not doing what he wanted us to do. We're sad. We're crying. It's exactly what he asked us not to do. So I came up with the idea of doing this family-oriented outdoor show where we do everything, fishing, hunting, hiking, you name it. We're doing whitewater rafting and bungee jumping coming up soon. That we would do this outdoor show and just put it on YouTube and Facebook. And we would do it to kind of motivate the family to honor his wishes. And that's exactly what we've done. And we're in our third season now. We're 5 episodes deep into season 3, and we've got, an endorsement video from Bill Dance. We talk to him and his daughter on a regular basis. And that's a different story, but it was my brother's bucket list item to fish with him before he passed, and we never could get it done. And I guess, Bill Dance talked about, his two sisters, he had to bury the cancer, and so he felt really connected to what we were doing and wanted to do something special for our show and did that for us. And we've just grown and grown and grown, and we're over 400,000 unique households a week are watching our show, and over 3 million video views a month, and humbling experiences of gaining partnerships and sponsorships with companies like Lose and Strike King and Academy Sports and Zoom Baits and a lot of local up and coming companies like Freaky Franks and our local Linex suppliers give us all kinds of support. And we got a local trailer company, Hoghead Trailers, that supports us. And, Ryan Coolers and Jackson Kayaks. And, 2.5 years ago, I would have never expected that it would have turned into what it's turned into today. And it has. It's helped the entire family. It's my dad, they have been wonderful with technology in their age. And they've went out and bought cameras, and they still film and give me the footage. And they go on their own adventures, and we go on adventures ourselves. So it's done exactly what we wanted it to do.
And what he wanted to do, no doubt.
Yeah.
So, man, that's good stuff, man. I don't even know what to say after all that. That's great. So,
that was the nutshell version. I can talk for days.
Well, yeah, go ahead. We're not on that app now. We can go as long as we want.
it's just been amazing, man. I mean, I'm lucky that, you know, I have the ability to, you know, I took public speaking classes in college. I took computer classes in college and high school and grew up messing with computers on the side thanks to my oldest brother, Ronnie. And you know, it's just, it's like, you know, I ended up working in the automotive department, or the automotive, industry, I guess you could say, for the past 16 years. And, you know, that's kind of my day job. And I do a lot of, I guess, numbers and computer programming for these companies that build automotive parts and do data analytics and stuff like that. And, I mean, it pays the bills, but it's not what I wanted to do when I was back in high school looking forward to that American dream, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But luckily, all that education and work experience that I've been given and everything that my parents taught me about the outdoors and being a gentleman and a stand-up guy has all culminated into this Outdoors in the Bluegrass show and allowed us to do it on a very minimal budget, because we do all of our own filming, we do all of our own video production, graphics design, website design. We programmed and maintain all of our own apps on the Roku and Amazon Fire. So I mean, if we had to outsource all that, there's no way we could afford it. So it's a very blessed situation.
That's great. So people can find your show. I know you said Roku and Amazon Fire. I mean, are you on like Hunt Channel or
what are you on? We aired season one on the Hunt Channel last year.
Mm-hmm.
But you can go to, you can Google Outdoors in the Bluegrass and we pop up all over the place,
right.
Luckily enough. But, you can find us on Roku, on Amazon Fire, Android TV. We have an Android app. We have an Amazon app. We can be found. We have of course, everything's on YouTube, and we put everything on Facebook. And then we also have our website, outinthebg.com, which has all of our episodes. We do 24 episodes a year, but then we also do a bunch of, like, little short videos. Mm-hmm. And sometimes those little short videos are, like, the really cool, exciting clips from the long 30-minute episode. But we also do, like, a lot of instructional and how-to videos, like how to tune and set up a baitcaster, how to fish the white bass run, and so forth. And we do some promotional videos for a lot of our sponsors that are educational and helpful. So, I mean, there's just a lot of content. You can spend hours and hours going through it.
Okay, well, that was my next question. I was going to ask you, you know, if your shows were informational or more entertainment or what. So you kind of answered that. Obviously, they're both. But, you was talking about the informational as far as fishing right there, your guide service. You talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. I mean, that's funny because where we live, there's actually two locations, but the closest one to us is Salt River, which feeds the Taylorsville Lake Reservoir Basin up here, just about 30 minutes from us. And every spring, and, of course, the white bass come up and spawn. And, of course, it's like one of the best fishing experiences you could possibly have. And it's on, the access to this fishing area is on public WMA land, which U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and Fish and Wildlife, they maintain all that. So it's public access. And there's a lot of, you know, locals and old fellas who know about it, but not a lot of the younger crowd like us. And, you know, we fished that on and filmed it on our very first season. It was episode 9 of our first season. And then we did a lot of short videos prior to the run. We would go and kind of, I guess you could say, scout it, check water conditions, see if they had moved up and started spawning yet. And we started giving information. And then after that, we did a full-blown episode about us actually fishing it. And that kind of ended up being our niche for the show. I mean, actually, that's how we ended up partnering with Lou's and Strike King. They ran across our YouTube video before we were even on Roku, and one day I got an email from the senior vice president of Lou's and Strike King saying, hey, I'd love to support your show, and I was like, holy crap. So it's just kind of blossomed from that, and then last year we kind of repeated the same thing, and we did the same thing, and then last year we heard rumors that they also came back up and spawned again in the fall around October, and everyone was like, that's just a rumor, that's not true. Well, we went out, and lo and behold, it's true. And so we became even more popular, proving what people thought was more or less just a folk tale, and it just sparked it. And, the first year we went, we could go down there and fish. We'd be the only truck parked in the parking lot.
Hmm.
Last year we went and fished it. quite a few bit more people in the parking lot. This year, we go and fish it, and, I mean, we're at the point now where we can't even go to, like, Kohl's just to get the kids some clothes without somebody saying, hey, can I get a picture with you?
Oh,
which
that's
is
great.
Super humbling. I mean, it's amazing. I just went to the feed store the other day, and this guy was like, man, I watch your show. So, and then when they started asking for autographs, I just, of course we do it. You know, we're super humbled and excited that our fans, you know, we've got such a local, loyal fan base, even though our show can be seen all across the United States. And it's just super cool. But I try to explain to these guys, you know, we're just as real as you are. In fact, you probably have a bigger house than me. We just keep it really real. We always make sure that we respond to all of our fans, whether it be on Facebook or YouTube. And funny side story, we actually made a post the other day. I'm trying to build a small boat for bow fishing. We're just getting into bow fishing. Mm-hmm. And I made a post that I was looking for a small aluminum boat. Well, there was a fan about 20 minutes up the road who said, I'll give you a boat. I love your show so much. He goes, you always respond. You always talk back. He goes, you are unlike any other show I've ever seen. I want to donate this boat to you and your show. Mm-hmm. So it's just ridiculously humbling, man. And so to get back to the original question, I told you I could talk today.
Oh, that's great. It's a podcast.
We brought in so, I mean, we'd go down to the White Bass this past spring, and you couldn't even park. Mm-hmm. The parking lots were full. People were parking up on the hills, walking down the hills. And, of course, there was a lot of people who were upset. You've done told everybody the secret.
Oh,
but
yeah.
But there were 5 times to 10 times as many who were happy, who never even fished a day in their life and went to Walmart and bought rods and reels and brought their kids down there to fish this thing that we have highlighted so greatly over the state of Kentucky in the past 2 years. And, you know, my wife and I looked at each other, and a buddy of mine, Chad, that, you know, he does a lot of adventures and stuff with us, and he helps out a lot, especially with the white bass fishing. We said, we need to look into doing a God service for this. And, of course, the original question came up was, can you guide on public land? So I contacted Kentucky Department of Fish and Wildlife Services, and I told them, you know, I contacted our fisheries officer here in Anderson County, and I asked him, hey, I want to do some guided white bass runs, not on a boat, on land, and because we've had requests for it for the past 2 years, hey, can you guide us out there? We'll pay you. And so we asked him, is this legal? He's like, yeah. He goes, here's all the documentation on what you need to do to get your guide's license. As long as you follow that, you're good. So, you know, we went ahead and, you know, of course, we've restructured our business license to encompass all the businesses we're doing now. We're getting ready to take our first aid and CPR classes. We've already done our criminal background checks through Kentucky State Police. And then the next step is actually to apply for the guide's license. And we're going to start guiding white bass trips. Initially, our guide service will strictly be for the white bass spawn in the spring and in the fall. Now, this fall, we're going to take a couple non-commercial groups out to test the waters. They'll be our guinea pigs.
Right.
So we're going to do that. We're going to take some out for the fall run. And then in spring of 2020, we're actually going to start doing the commercial guided trips and offer 4 and 8 hour trips in 1-person groups, 2-person groups, or 3 to 5-person groups. We're going to make sure that one of our sponsors is Jackson Kayaks and Orion Coolers. Well, they've been super supportive of it. And, one of the things we want to do was, you know, we got this wagon that we take with us because you're walking public land across the rivers. We bring this wagon with us, and we want to make sure that we provide a full-blown experience. So not only do our customers get to fish the white bass run, but all they got to do is bring their fishing license. We supply the rods and reels thanks to Lou's. They're sending us all the rods and reels and fishing line we need. Berkeley's sending us, because we use a very specific bait, and I'm not going to give that away anymore, but you can find it in the old videos if you go look for it.
Yeah.
We use a very specific bait that makes us very successful, provided by Berkeley, and Berkeley's going to send us some baits to help support our guide efforts. We got some coolers and some stuff to bring from Orion Coolers. We want to make this a full-blown experience where, you know, we provide their lunch, we provide all the water and Gatorade they need, that's included in their price. So that, you know, it's just super fun and exciting, and we will, because we know we film the TV show, we will capture the entire experience on picture and video for our customers and give them that afterwards, so it's something they can take with them. So we're super excited about it, and we've already launched a separate page just for the guide service, and it's growing rapidly already because, I mean, we have a fan base from the show, and so many of our fans have asked us to do this. It's growing rapidly. The amount of interest in us doing it exceeds the amount of people who don't want us to do it. So we're doing it.
Oh, yeah. Good deal. Go for it. You know, that's great. Sounds great. So, you know, we was talking a little bit, and of course we're on fishing right now, and your guide service, you all check him out, check the page out there. We was talking a little bit about the striper fishing, and of course Conley Bottoms there at Cumberland. And is that where you said you usually go, or?
Yeah, there's a whole lot of guides down there, and we went out of Grider Hill down there towards the dam. And what I'd like to say first and foremost about all the guys down there is they are all top notch.
Oh yeah,
they all collaborate with one another. It's not a competition. If one's booked, they send them to the next one, and they work together. They give tips together. One of the first guys that we went out with was Hensley's Guide Service, and he's a young gentleman. He's younger than me. He's from Ohio, and he comes down on the weekends and does it. And he is just—he's ridiculously good at it, man. He put us on fish, and we limited out in no time, and it was amazing. And then there was another guy. His name's Jeff. He actually works for Fish and Wildlife and started up his own guide service called JB's Guide Service down there, who a buddy of mine went out with this year, and we had plans to go out with, who is doing just as great work. And, man, it is unlike any other thing. I've caught, you know, we used to do a lot of hybrid fishing down at Barron River, but we never, you know, I remember growing up when we camped at Conley Bottom on Cumberland, we always would go down to the docks at night, fish with worms, because they tell us, you know, you fish off the dock at night, drop your line 50 feet, and you'll catch stripers. Well, we caught a bunch of carp, but we never caught no stripers. And so this was really the first opportunity last year I've had to actually get into the stripers, and it is the coolest fishing experience I've ever done.
Oh, it's a blast. And, you know, I witnessed what she's talking about with them guides working with each other. The guy I went out with, Damon Melcho, which he's not a guide, he's just a friend, but he knows the guides down there because he's the owner of Extreme Bait Tanks. So, of course, you know, a lot of those guides are using his tanks, you know, how hard it is to keep the shad alive and the herring that they use mostly down there. But, they, like I said, they all talk to each other, let each other know what's going on, and it's just a blast. Let's see, the one I caught, which it would have been my biggest one, it was somewhere around 32, 33 inches. I mean, for me, that was a monster. You know, I was like, wow, you know, I was so excited, and it was barely hooked. You know, you could see it was barely hooked, and of course, he's telling me what to do, and everybody's freaking out, and we finally get in the net, and, you know, it's just great. It's a blast. I love it. You know, so for any of you all that haven't went down there and experienced that, you should go. A two striper limit per person, and you know, if you're with the right guy or the right guide, they normally get you your two pretty quick, don't they, Tyler?
Oh yeah, they do. And I mean, it might seem a little bit pricey, but I mean, once you realize what these guys do, the amount of time they spend before they even take you out. I mean, they spend a couple days before, and I mean, countless hours, you know, catching the bait and, you know, going out and using the sonars to find where they're at and doing scouting and pre-fishing, and the amount of time they spend not getting paid to prep for your guide service is amazing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's
not like they just go out there and throw a line in the water. I mean, like you said, all the scouting, just like, you know, I'm a big deer hunter, all the scouting that's involved with that, I mean, they're doing the same thing, and the bait, you know, they're always stressed out over the bait, which Extreme Bait Tanks come in handy because it'll hold them, it'll keep them shad alive. I don't know if you know this. Well, I'll just, my listeners know this already. But when I went down there the first time, you know, I've dealt with shad because I like to catfish and stuff, and, you know, them things are hard to keep alive. And these Extreme Bait Tanks, I mean, they'll keep them alive for a long time. It was just amazing to me. But, anyways, so.
Yeah, I know that was a big thing while we were down there. I mean, they had these big tanks, and as far as I know, I mean, probably they're using the Extreme tanks that you're talking about, especially Hensley's Guide Service. I know he just had bought a new tank right before we went out with him, and I'm like, they're mixing chemicals, and they're doing all this stuff, and they're like, you don't know how hard it is to keep these bait fish alive.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, I can tell by all the work you're doing and this big, huge rig of a tank you got in the middle of your boat that, you know, you've invested this money for a reason. So it's the amount of money they also invest, you know, with the hopes of booking these trips is astounding. There's a lot of capital investment that goes in, I mean, for their insurance, and, I mean, they've got, you know, hand decks and stuff like that, the guys that help them, and, you know, they got the gas maintenance on the boats. I mean, it's just...
I know what...
They definitely have to have a love for what they're doing to invest that amount of time and capital into that kind of a business.
Yeah. Yeah, it's worth every penny. Well, while we're on... While we are on Cumberland, the Rainbow Trout, I watched a show. I can't remember what show it was. It was one of the local Kentucky shows here. But they was down there catching some monster rainbow trout. I think it was at the Wolf Creek Dam. I don't know. Did you see that?
Yeah. I mean, that's the most highest stocked area of Kentucky right there. Kentucky Fish and Wildlife, actually the trout hatchery is right there, and then you've got Hatchery Creek on the, you know, off the backside of the dam, and they stock trout like crazy in there. And I mean, you know, you see stocking numbers at all these local Finns lakes and other stuff, but I think the amount of trout that they stock on a regular basis in that area is like hundreds of thousands.
Yeah, well, I was amazed at the size of these trout they was catching. I mean, they was huge. So
I tell you what, we work with a guy, his name's Franklin Smith. He owns a bait company called Freaky Franks, and we started working with him last year because a buddy of mine came over and showed me these baits, and I was like, holy crap. And so we got in touch with him before we even fished with them, and I mean, they are crappie and trout magnets. And some of the pictures this guy sends me of the trout, I'm like, I didn't even know trout that big existed.
Well, I didn't either when I watched this, and I cannot think of the show. I can't believe it, daggone it. Tim Farmer used to be on the show. Yeah, that's what it is. Daggone, I couldn't remember that. That Chad guy that replaced Tim Farmer was the one I was watching.
Yeah,
that's who I was watching. And I was like, man, I cannot believe it. That guy does a good job, too, you know. Of course, Tim Farmer, he's into the cooking and all that stuff now. I still follow him.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah, he does his cooking show, and he'll get out there. And I think I saw something where he was doing a show of, like, something like lake to table or something like that he's got coming up where he actually goes out and fishes and then has to cook close to the lake or something. I'm just kind of interested to see something like that. That'd be neat.
Well, you're talking how successful your show is, and, you know, just talking to you, I can tell how genuine you are. And that's why Tim Farmer, I think that's why his shows are so popular. I mean, he's just a genuine guy, him and his wife. It's just, that's what people like to watch, you know?
So, oh, yeah. Yeah, that's what we get on the most regular basis. That's what we get told is, I like you because you're real.
Yeah.
And we are. I mean, we're real and we're real and we're relevant. I mean, we had an episode. I mean, we film an episode as long, you know, we're pretty fun to watch. I mean, we cut up and we go back and forth, and it's entertaining to watch what we do. And, I mean, I did an entire episode on public land hunting, and I saw one deer and never bagged one.
Mm-hmm.
But it gets tons of views, and people appreciate, you know, like, well, you didn't even get a deer, but you released the episode, and it was entertaining to watch. We really thought you were going to get one, so we watched it, and it was still entertaining to us. We just love that you're real and relevant, and the relevance comes in. I mean, generally, when we film an episode, for the most part, you know, if I film an episode, it's going to be released and aired within the next couple of weeks. We film, produce, and air within a matter of a week or two. That way, whatever content we're producing is happening right at this moment and can be relevant to the people who are watching it at that time. So
yeah.
It really works for us.
I think that's a great idea. I think that's the way to go, and it's working. So, well, let's talk about your minerals. I mean, we better get to them.
Yeah. Yeah, I've always said that I always make fun of people sometimes. Because they'll darn near try anything to get a deer to come in.
Oh, yeah.
And what's funny is I'm just as guilty.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, we've had, you know, like I said, my dad, he turned 80, and, I mean, he goes as far back as hammering a jar of peanut butter to the tree, you know, and all these tricks and maple syrup on logs and everything you could possibly think of. And in all honesty, they all work.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when we started, you know, years ago kind of developing our own little mixes and things and, you know, trying to come up with things that would lure in and maybe even, you know, give them some good food supplements to give them the nutrition and minerals and stuff they need to create a healthy herd and healthy genetics and things like that. And we've worked on it over the years. And then last year, you know, we kind of had this idea of, because we did a video our first season. It was actually the last video I did for season one. And I made this little, I mean, it was just a little video about, you know, mixing some Jell-O, salt, and sugar together, which works, by the way, could just be an attractant for deer. And, I mean, it blew up. It was our highest viewed video forever, especially on YouTube, over 100,000 views. And I was like, holy crap. And so we had this idea. It was like, well, you know, this other stuff that we're making that's actually healthy for the deer, why don't we try to see if we could market that and get that out there and start selling it? So my dad and I talked, you know, because he's a businessman, and we said, let's try to get a field staff together. So last year we came up with this, I think we came up with like 6 or 7 different products that we used, and then, of course, I got all cocky and creative and came up with a few other ones that I thought were really neat. And they all worked, and they all got great feedback. We think we got like 15 field staff members that we picked, and, you know, we put it together, and we basically sell it to them for just a little over cost. You know, whatever it cost us to make, and then a little bit extra for our time. And these field staff, they went out and they used them. And I mean, we were getting pictures of people harvesting deer, trail cams of deer all over, digging holes in the ground. You know, and we had some videos where they would put it out on new property and do the 24-hour test. And we got a ton of videos back from our field staff on the 24-hour test of deer coming in and finding and eating this stuff up within less than 24 hours. So the feedback was amazing, and I was like, we really need to hit that next year. Mm-hmm. And so we decided to come up and go ahead and go full-blown as another subsidiary of our business and do the deer attractants and minerals for outdoors and the bluegrass. But we're focusing on 3 products this year because they were the most popular and the most useful. One is an attractant with a little bit of mineral in it, and the other one is more of a feed to really help give the deer what they need as far as, you know, food and supplements and minerals and stuff like that. And then the third product is a delivery system for the attractant. It may or may not be needed. It's a preference thing. So we're going to start selling these. We actually submitted, I made a post yesterday stating we were looking, you know, because we told the field staff last year, you're automatically going to be one of our promotional staff team members, pro staff, promotional staff, next year when we launch this stuff. You're automatically in. So we made a post yesterday on Facebook stating, hey, we need 20 new pro staff members on top of last year's field staff members. I have over 1,000 emails, and they're still flowing in. And of course, you know, what we did is because we want to be, we're very big on transparency. So we wanted to basically say, if you're interested, send us an email, and then we will send you some details, because that was really the best way to organize it. So they would send it to us, and then we would send them the details, explain the product in depth, what it does, how much the pro staff pricing is, how much the wholesale pricing is, how much retail pricing is, and they have the opportunity to create relationships with business, and they can sell the product, they'll buy it at pro staff, they can sell it for retail, and they put 100% of that money in their pocket. So they have the opportunity to make some money as a pro staff member in this product. So we wanted to make it very clear that, you know, we're not just giving this stuff away for free. Our expectations, you know, we don't have, you got to make so many posts a month, or, you know, you got to generate so many leads a month. I'm not doing that. That's a freaking nightmare, and I'm not keeping up with it. It was very simple. If you buy it, you can sell it and make money. I prefer you use it. Send me some pictures off your trail cams. Share it on social media when you can with positive reviews, if it's positive for you. If it's not, okay. And if you harvest the deer, send us a picture. Mm-hmm. That's my requirement. So we're pretty simple about it, and, I mean, it's blowing up. So we get to the products. The first one we call is Buck Ooze. And it is basically a sugar liquid, a cane sugar-based liquid, that has a mixture of sodium and calcium in it, but the key is the flavor. The key is the fact that it's like a ooze, and the other one is the flavoring and the aroma. We found a place that provides actual extracted flavoring for this stuff. So, for example, and that kind of changes within them. So we do apple, we do peanut butter, which I don't know anybody else who does liquid peanut butter attractants, but we do. The peanut butter, the cherry, vanilla, and maple. Mm-hmm. But since they're natural extracts, the actual peanut butter ooze has protein in it, mm-hmm. where the other ones don't. So that's what's really cool about it, but they work really well. We've had people take this ooze, and they pour it on the ground, and they dig the hole up like crazy. They pour it over their corn, they pour it on stumps, or they pour it in this device that we created that hangs from a tree, like kind of like a feeder. and it has a mechanism, and you pour the ooze in it, and then it has a mechanism on the bottom of it that controls the flow or the drip of the ooze, and you can hang that over whatever you want to hang it over, wherever it's going to drip. And, you know, the viscosity of the ooze changes based upon temperature. The colder it gets, the thicker it gets, right? So that adjustment allows you to not only control the drip to your preference, but also control the drip based upon temperature. So that's one of the things. Those are the two items that we're selling. The next one is what we call Buck MRE, which goes off the old military term, meal ready to eat. And then this is what was really nice. It is a sweet-based, grain-based, and it has some corn in it. It has some whole corn in it. Feed that is cherry vanilla flavored. And it is what contains all of your crude fats, your crude proteins, your phosphorus, your selenium, your calcium, your salts, your vitamins, and all those minerals that you want to feed your herd to keep them healthy. And it also has that sweet aroma to it. So the combination of the Buck Ooze and the Buck MRE has just been super successful on bringing them in and keeping them come back. We're getting ready to launch it to where you can buy it in the next week or two, where anybody can buy it, not just the pro staff. And we're trying to get it into some more local stores around here and stuff, because we're doing it in 50-pound bags for the MRE and 5-gallon buckets, you know, with sealed lids and a handle and, you know, printed labels and all that good jazz. So shipping it is not an option right now.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get there, but we're super excited about it, and there's a lot of other people who are super excited about it, and we already have a full hunting season of positive results behind us, so, I mean, we're ready to rock and roll. And, you know, our website is outinthebg.com, and not only is that the website for our show, but it also has a section to give you information on our deer attractants and our guy service that we're doing.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, for me, minerals are a big recipe to my early season Kentucky hunting. I mean, you know, you have to locate those bucks. I mean, if you want to be successful on a consistent, you know, year in and year out, killing a good buck or whatever size buck you might be going after, you know, you have to locate those bucks well before season. And the way to do that is with attractants or minerals. And for the people that listen to this show all the time, you know how I feel about that. I'm always preaching, get your minerals out. That way you can get your cameras up, create your hit list, or how, you know, whatever it is.
Sure.
And then you're ready to rock and roll come that first
day.
Right. Because, you know, here in Kentucky where season comes in so early, those bucks are still in their summer patterns. They're still bachelored up for the most part. And you can get away with a little bit more. And my experiences, when they're in their summer pattern, you know, I just feel you can get away with some things that you can't normally get away with later in the season, October, November.
Right.
So.
Well, and I mean, and you're 100% right on that. And we really wanted to launch this sooner than June because a lot of our field staff members last year, you know, they feed year-round.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of, I mean, you basically got a couple scenarios. You got people, you know, who hunt public land only, but you can't use any type of attractants to feed on public land. And then you've got people who own their land. And then you got people who lease their land. Mm-hmm. And then you got people who hunt land that their friend or their dad or their mom or their uncle or their grandfather or something let them hunt. And, yes, I know I hear a lot of people preach, you know, quit using attractants and feed. Learn how to hunt. You know, you need to learn how to hunt these animals and find their food sources. Well, I mean, sometimes it doesn't work. I mean, we have a TV show, but we have nowhere to hunt this year, believe it or not.
Yeah.
We had a 30-acre spot last year down in towards Royal County, and we got that just because my dad's neighbor had some extra land after a house burned down. He said, you can hunt it, but there's a store right in front of it, and a golf course over here, and a neighborhood over there. And I looked at the aerial picture of this property, and I looked at my dad, and I said, this is going to suck.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing around. You know, everyone tells you, well, you want to hunt natural food sources. Well, I'm telling you, that was the only place we had to hunt, and there was no natural food source. Now, we went and we scouted it, and we walked on land. We found scat. We found previous scrapes. We found trails, and I was like, crap. So we put up some trail cameras, and we started seeing deer, and I mean big deer. And I'm like, where the heck are they coming from? It's like, what is going on? Where are these deer coming from? And so, I mean, we started using these minerals and stuff, and what it did was is it really brought in those deer that were using that. I guess it's really just a travel path through that area that was highly populated with human beings because of the golf course and the store. It that attracted, and us feeding brought them in, and then you started using that thicket as a bedding area. It brought them, made them stay and hang there. It was a viable source of food for them. So the people out there that want to knock all the put the attractants and minerals and stuff down, I mean, not every hunting situation is the same.
Well, and everyone is in different situations. You know, you hear, shoot this size buck, don't shoot a young buck. I don't care. I just want people out there hunting. Hunting comes first. Everyone's in a different situation. You might have people out there that work 70 hours a week that want to just hunt. They may have one day to hunt. And if they can use an attractant or mineral to increase their chances to killing a buck on that one stinking day, I mean, go for it. It doesn't matter. It's no one's business. It's such a, you're in this, you have your show, and I know you're all over social media, no doubt, as I'm, I am saying, and you see that stuff, and it gets under my skin. Because, I have to watch it because I get on this podcast, and then I'll just, I'll blow up on that stuff because I'm all about supporting any hunter for whatever they want to do as long as they're doing it by legal means.
Exactly.
If I can't pat someone on the back for killing a basket rack or whatever it may be, I mean, whatever. Because I come up killing basket racks. Now I kill big bucks, That's just the evolution of a hunter. How many times we hear that? But I hear big-time hunters say the evolution of a hunter. But then I also hear a lot of them same guys, scolding some young kid for shooting a young buck. And I'm like, what are you – hold on. What are you talking about here?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's kind of – we are neither trophy hunters nor meat hunters.
Yeah.
Just a hunter. We process our own deer, and we eat every piece of meat that comes off that deer. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But am I hunting to feed my family? No, I'm not. But at the same time, I'm going to shoot a doe.
Oh, yeah.
If it walks in, I'm going to use my tag. I'm going to shoot a doe because it's meat, and it's a deer, and it's a hunt, and it's a thrill, and it's a memory, and it's a learning experience.
Absolutely.
And, am I going to shoot a 4-point on day one? No. Am I going to shoot if I haven't bagged my buck tag and it's the last day of season and a 4-point walks in, am I going to shoot it? Probably.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's just kind of how we operate. And am I going to let my son, who's never shot a deer, a 4-point walk in on day one? That's his choice.
Yeah.
If he wants to take that 4-point on day one, he's never shot a deer before, that's a trophy to him.
Yeah.
So, and for me, if a big buck with a big rack walks in, that's a bonus for me.
Mm-hmm.
We just encourage the thrill and the memories that are made from hunting. I'm like you. I mean, there's a progression of hunters. I mean, I've got 2 9-points on the wall. If a 9-point walks in on day one, I'm probably going to let him walk because chances are I'm going to see, a 12-point.
Different situations for everyone, and people have become too comfortable with calling other hunters out for not, stuff that's none of their business. It blows my mind. It comes up to that old saying, if you don't have nothing nice to say, don't say nothing at all. My son, he's 18. He's still at home, getting ready to go to college. And he's killed a few really good bucks. When we go hunting this season, he'll be limited time. And I tell him, you shoot what you want. I don't care if it's a spike. Or if you want to wait for a big buck, wait for a big buck. This is your hunt. You know what I mean?
Right.
And we're going to celebrate. And I encourage any young hunter or any hunter, old hunter or whoever, there should never be a feud between the meat hunters and the big buck hunters because, we have to take care of hunting first. And it takes all of our numbers to keep this thing rolling. And I just don't know if people understand. I don't know if they look at it that way. You know what I'm saying?
I don't know. To be honest, I don't know how these people look at it. I mean, I've seen so much when the new crossbow regulations come out and people in zone 4, they're like, oh, you've done ruined our the EHD and CWD, it's all taking all of our population, and now you're going to let people bow hunt, it's like, we're not going to have any deer left to hunt. And I'm like, did you look at the harvest numbers last year?
There's more deer now. Deer hunting is at an all-time high. I mean, I remember hunting in the late 80s and 90s, all through the 90s. I remember those days. I remember when there wasn't no turkeys, Everything is going good right now, but we have to, we have to have hunters. We have to have those license sales to keep it rolling So we want to encourage people in there, whether it be crossbow. And I'll tell you what, you know, if they're whining about the crossbow, did you see that new crack shot coming out? Who makes that?
Yeah.
Daggone it. I can't remember who makes that. So,
I
seen that the other day. Well, it's pretty much a .22 rifle that you can shoot arrows out of. So,
yep.
There you go. You all have fun with that one.
I mean, now you got a crossbow. What is it, the Reaper or whatever it is? It can shoot like 100 yards.
Oh, yeah, 100 yards.
I mean, that's insane. It is what it is. I mean, it's evolution, and evolution's going to happen in technology and everything we do. I mean, look, fishing's the same way with fishing gear. Everything's changed. I mean, everybody's just going to have to get over it. I mean, my funny thing is like, okay, so for an example, my nephew, he's a big, you know, he's gotten into hunting pretty big, and he shoots a lot of competitive archery, so he's really good. He's more of an arch, and he was really wanting to get this huge 9-point, and no one else was going to be able to shoot it, and he wanted to let it go one more year. Well, guess what happened? The neighbor didn't feel the same way.
Well, yeah.
And the neighbor got the deer he wanted.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's just like, and, you know, and if the other neighbor doesn't get it, someone's going to hit him on the road. I mean, you just, that's the first day, my oldest son, he went and got his orange card a couple years ago. We sat through that class, and there's a lot of old-timers teaching that class up here at the Sportsman's Club.
Yeah.
And I just commended every one of them because, you know, they had that philosophy of, you know, don't be like that.
Yeah.
You see a spike on your first day, your first time hunting, you want to shoot it, by God, shoot it.
And guess what? That's going to keep them young guys coming back. And, you know, when they're ready, you know, they'll start waiting on them bigger bucks, just like I did, or you know, hunters all the way down through the line. That's the way we all have done. Just because you've started shooting big bucks doesn't give you the right now to go back and start telling these younger hunters or new hunters. I'm not just saying we have a lot of women coming into hunting now.
And
I know for a fact that a lot of these newer hunters or hunters that haven't shot, you know, a buck, I know because of social media, I feel they feel pressured to shoot a big buck. You know,
I see it
on social media. I'm sure you do too. And it really gets under my skin. But it is what it is. And, you know, for y'all listening, go out there. I'm sitting right here in my basement. I have a whole, I don't know how many deer I have down here on the wall. But, you know, the smallest buck was just exciting as this biggest buck right here. You know what I mean? Those memories. My first buck was a 5-pointer. And you know, I wish I had that rack.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that, especially like the women getting in. You know, my wife and I, we've been married for 13 years. And she comes to the woods with me and helps, you know, set up feeders and check trail cameras. And she enjoys the time riding on the four-wheeler and getting out in the woods. Because, I mean, she grew up a tomboy. She loves to fish and everything else, but she's never hunted a day in her life.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess me expressing it in pictures were just not enough. But over the course of the past couple of years of us doing this show and getting to see my actual real emotion on camera of what I felt, because we don't recreate anything in our show. Mm-hmm. Nothing in our show is fake. I don't recreate anything. It happened. When you see me act a certain way, that's legit. It really happened that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess over the course of the past couple of years of her actually seeing my true raw emotions of what happens when I harvest a deer, she looked at me a couple months ago and she goes, I want to go deer hunting with you this year and get a deer. I'm like, are you serious? Heck yeah. Let's go.
That's awesome. That's what it's all about. You know, I don't know about you hunting with your wife. I have to tell you a story. I know this is your episode, but.
No, go ahead.
You kind of open it up and give me. So I take my wife turkey hunting for the first time and, first off, we don't see a lot of bear down on this end of the state. I don't know if you all see many or not where you're
at.
No,
not at all.
But I've seen just a few. But I take her turkey hunting. And right off the bat, it's just starting to get light where you can just barely see, you know what I mean? And I see something run across the field and it's bigger than black, you know? And I'm like, whoa, that looks like a bear. but, you know, I really haven't seen a whole lot, so I'm thinking, surely it wasn't a bear. Well, I'm not a big bear expert, but it goes over in the brush, and it And I know when they snap their teeth from my bear hunting friends, that's a bad deal. So it starts snapping its teeth, then I know it's a bear. Now my wife's sitting here and I don't want her to run. And we've come down a logging road, and the first thing I think is that bear has cubs and they have to be behind us. You know what I'm saying? That's what it had no other reason to sit there and act the way it was, and it was angry. So I tell my wife, I had to lie to her, because I didn't want her to run. I said, "That's a dog." She said, "That's a bear." I said, "Well, that is a..." I said, "That is a bear, but do not run." And I said, "We're going to have to walk towards this bear a little bit and get out in that field." I said, "Because it's cubs behind us." And that's what I thought, No way. She starts talking. I said, "Please, not now. Do not throw a fit right here. This bear is going to charge, So finally, we walk out in that field, which we had to walk towards that bear just a little bit. And when we get out in that field, that bear shoots right down that logging road. So, I guess it must have had cubs down through there. I don't know, but anyways, what's the chance of that? So that kind of, and here I'm trying to tell her that never happens. Yeah, right. It's my first time out and there's a big old bear. So, that was just a good story. Like I said, it's just the memories and things like that that happen. That's what's great about hunting and being outdoors with your family,
So. Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the biggest thing is, the memories and the stories. I mean, before I was, like I said, I'm the youngest of five, so there's a lot of stories I've heard over the years that I never even got to witness that, I just play and envision in my head. And actually, it's my dad, we call him the devil dog because he was a Marine. So we had him start recording some segments of all these, because he always tells us, you kids better remember all these stories I tell you. And so I was like, why don't you tell these stories on video and we'll start doing the devil dog's whale tales. And do these short segments on our show, and then we'll have them forever, and everybody else gets to enjoy them too. So we're starting to do those and release some of those. We've released one so far, and he sent me more than I could imagine. I was like, wow. I mean, there are so many stories in a lifetime, and unfortunately, some of them, get forgotten. So wow. I mean, the more people you get involved, your kids, your wife, the better chance you have of keeping all those stories moving throughout history.
Absolutely. Man, that's awesome. Well, Tyler, I think we've about covered it all. See, that goes by pretty quick, doesn't it? That was an hour. Seems like we've been on here for 5 minutes. Well, before we get off here, you guys that are bashing the crossbows, I know every one of you have a muzzleloader that will shoot 300 yards, so think about that before you cross. And that's the truth. I've been wanting to say that forever. I keep forgetting. So,
and you're 100% right.
I know.
Not muzzleloaders anymore.
No. So before you start bashing the crossbows, go in there and look at your muzzleloader because you have one of those that's shooting up to 250, 300 yards. So anyways.
I'd like to say, for everybody who's listening, we've talked a lot about the popularity of our show and how humbled and everything we are. But I'm going to let a little secret out of the bag that I haven't let a whole lot of people know. And I know there's a lot of people out there who are trying to make something of themselves or chasing a dream or wanting to do something they love. I still work a 9-to-5, guys, so don't think I'm working my way there, but I'm not there yet. But if you love it, do it. If it makes you happy, do it. And here's the secret that I'm going to let the cat out of the bag. Our TV show, like I said, is self-filmed. It is filmed with cell phones and GoPros. And you would never know that unless I told you. Mm-hmm. So if you want to get out there, if you want to share your adventures and try and make something, do it. Worst thing that can happen is you had a blast and made more memories, get out there and do it.
Yeah. That's good advice. Good deal, man. Well, Tyler, hang on here. I'm going to shut this thing off. Hey, you all get your minerals in the ground. And
yeah.
We'll talk at you later.